in the book of John. We are getting close to finishing this thing. I think one more week and we'll be at it. Some of you probably heard about the fellow that was predicting the rapture would happen yesterday at 6 o'clock. And as you know, it didn't. We don't need to be puffed up about this thing. It's kind of actually quite sad. And I kind of had mixed feelings about the whole thing, because I got to thinking, you know, well, hey, God can use knuckleheads. What if you guys are right? I mean, wouldn't you, at least part of you, really rather be in heaven right now than here? I mean, I kind of would, you know. So part of me is kind of disappointed. I understand a little more about, I've been thinking about what Paul says in Philippians 1 about I'm torn. You know, I wish I could depart and be with Christ, and that's far better. But maybe God has me here for a little while, and that will mean fruitful labor, and that's a cool thing too. So that probably should be like our attitude, you know, about the whole thing. I understand that a new billboard has been proposed. Yeah. You know, can I say this? Some of you know some folks who are connected to this family radio. I know some friends who go surfing with a guy who listens to this thing all the time. And, you know, would you be open to being compassionate and gracious, not mocking, to those folks? Can you imagine what some of them must be feeling right now, especially thinking about the person that they valued this guy's opinion and find out that he's wrong on such a huge thing? So be open, you know, be gracious. I imagine some people are confused right now. The truth is, no man knows the day or the hour. But we are looking forward to the rapture. Absolutely. I hope that we're not just ready on a one-time shot. I hope that we're kind of hoping that at any moment, maybe tonight, what if the guy was only one day off? You know, you ought to think about making sure that you're ready, that you're right. Because that's what life is all about. Heaven is forever. This place is just temporary. Make sure that you're ready for heaven. Let's get into our study. We've made it past the death of Jesus Christ. That was John 19. And then on John 20, early on Sunday morning, Mary, Peter, and John all found the tomb empty. We saw how Jesus appeared first to Mary. And then that evening, Jesus appeared to all the disciples except for Thomas, because he wasn't there at the time. He was out doing something. He wasn't at the meeting. But how 1 week later, he appears to Thomas. You might call him Doubting Thomas, but he's not doubting now, I'll tell you. He appeared to Thomas. We pick it up in chapter 21, verse 1. It says, after these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. And in this way, he showed himself. Now it says, after these things, keep in mind that John does not give us a detailed account of every time that Jesus appears. He picks and chooses a few things, just like he has throughout the gospel. He pulls out what he wants to talk about. Luke tells us that Jesus would appear many times over 40 days. Luke says in Acts chapter 1 that it was through many, many infallible proofs they were convinced of the resurrection. And we know that Jesus didn't just appear to the guys in Jerusalem like we saw last week, in the last 2 weeks. Part of the time will be spent up north in Galilee, where Jesus spent most of his time in ministry. That was his home turf, up in the Galilee area, up north. It says here that after these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. Tiberias, the Sea of Tiberias, it's another name for the Sea of Galilee. And the name Sea of Tiberias comes from the big city that Herod the Great built on the west shore of the lake named Tiberias. There's still a city there today, Tiberias. Jesus spent most of his time around Capernaum. Capernaum up in the north. That was kind of like his headquarters during the 3.5 years of his ministry. Most of the stuff is done in that area, this whole northern area. It was here in Galilee, around the lake, that Jesus met the disciples and called them. Mark records, and as he walked by the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. Then Jesus said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you become fishers of men." They immediately left their nets and followed him. That happened up north, when he saw them up north as they were fishing. Mark goes on to record that Jesus had the same kind of encounter right after this with James and John, two sons of Zebedee. One of the writer of our gospel, John, right there at the lake, Jesus called them to be fishers of men. Our text, verse 2, Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. We get the guys that are at this particular event. 7 of the 11 remaining disciples are together at this point in this group. I'm saying 11 because Judas by this time is done. He's committed suicide. And so 7 of the remaining 11 are together. We know that at least Peter and the sons of Zebedee, who are the ones mentioned here, we know that at least Peter and the sons of Zebedee, which is James and John, we know that these guys are fishermen. Whether the others are or not, we're not sure. Verse 3. Simon Peter said to them, "I am going fishing." They said to him, "We are going with you also." They went out and immediately got into the boat, and that night they caught nothing. Nada. Zip. Zero. Peter says, "I'm going fishing." Now I got to tell you, some people just don't understand fishing.
He just caught a fish, a bait, a bass. I don't know how to spell the same. Guess where he took me? Fishing. Yeah, fishing. Water and everything. Oh, I know, they're so yucky. He almost made me touch a worm. Ugh. He said fishing, so I thought we were going on Daddy's yacht and getting sushi. Well, he is cute, though. You should see him in his little fishing outfit. But whatever, look at me. I worked out yesterday at the gym, treadmill, 3 minutes. Almost worked up a sweat. All I know is when we get back to dry land, eBay. Me or the boat. Oh, of course it's going to pick me. I don't know, the boat's kind of sparkly, though. My outfit matches it, and I did not even plan that. That's so funny. I know another guy that doesn't take me fishing. I know.
Now, Peter says, "I'm going fishing." Is that a bad thing? Is it a bad thing that Peter's going fishing? Remember, he is a fisherman by trade. Maybe he's beginning to think about all the bills that have been piling up while he's been gone. Peter's a family man. He's got a family to feed. He's got mouths to feed, people to take care of. Maybe he needs to kind of raise some funds at the moment. Now, Jesus had told the guys to meet him in Galilee. They're there on purpose. They're not there because they're running away. Jesus told them to go to Galilee, that they would spend time together in Galilee. But Jesus hasn't showed up yet. Maybe they're getting bored. Maybe they're kind of wondering, what's up? Where's Jesus with all this? Is this a good thing that he's fishing? Something to think about. It says they got into the boat in verse 3. They went out and immediately got into the boat. The word that's used here for boat, the Greek word, talks about a boat somewhere around 15 to 20 feet long. In 1986, the water level of the lake, I mean, we call it the Sea of Galilee, but it's a big freshwater lake, big, big freshwater lake. The water level was low in 1986, and a couple of brothers discovered something sticking out of the mud in an area that had been normally underwater. And they did a little bit of digging, and they found a 2,000-year-old boat. They were able to dig it out to preserve it. And today it's in a museum on the shore of Galilee at Gennesar, which is known as in the Bible as ancient Gennesaret. There's this boat there. They call it the Jesus boat. Was it Jesus' boat? No, nobody's really claiming that. But it's a boat like the kind that Jesus would be in, Peter would fish from back in the day, because it actually dates back into this time period. It says they fished all night and they caught nothing in verse 3. There's a principle here, and I take me a minute to try to explain it. The principle is this. I want to talk about the frustration of saying no. Frustration of saying no. We've already talked about how 3+ years ago Jesus called these guys at the Sea of Galilee. Jesus said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." When you track the events of the gospel and you lay each of the gospels side by side, you find out that this isn't the only time Jesus told them this. Turn in your Bibles to Luke chapter 5. Luke tells a story that seems a little different, and I believe it is different, because when you track the events, you find out that this account in Luke 5 takes place after the account in Mark 1. So I look at this as a separate incident. Jesus has already said, "Follow me and I'll make you fishers of men." It said they left everything and followed him. Well, look at Luke chapter 5. I'm not going to stick all the verses up there, so follow me in your Bible. It says, "So it was, as the multitude pressed around Jesus to hear the word of God, that he stood by the lake of Gennesaret." There's another name for the same place. We've already mentioned Gennesaret. That's where that Jesus boat thing is. Kind of interesting coincidence. "And they saw two boats standing by the lake, and the fishermen had gone from them and were washing their nets. Then he got into one of the boats, which was Simon's, and asked him to put out a little from the land. And he sat down and taught the multitudes from the boat." See, people are kind of pushing up against him. It's kind of hard to talk when everybody's crowding up against your face and you got your back to the water and stuff. So he gets in the boat, goes out a little ways. That way he can address the whole crowd. "When he had stopped speaking, he said to Simon, 'Launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch.' But Simon answered and said to him, 'Master, we have toiled all night and caught nothing. Nevertheless, at your word, I will let down the net.' And when they had done this, they caught a great number of fish, and their net was breaking. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them, and they came and filled both the boats so that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, 'Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord.' For he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish which they had taken. And so also were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, he said, 'Do not be afraid. From now on, you will catch men.' So when they had brought their boats to land, they forsook all and followed him." Now, when you look at this account, I normally look at this and think about, you know, Peter saying, "Oh, Lord, depart from me. I'm a sinful man." And I think of the fact that he's just overwhelmed that Jesus is so awesome, so great, and he's realizing right now, and I am not awesome and great, and you are, and so you kind of think of that whole interaction. But what if there's another thing that's going on here as well? What if this is the second time? And Jesus had already said, "Follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men." And yet in Luke 5, what do we catch them having just finished doing? They've been out on the lake fishing for fish. And Jesus just happens to show up and just happens to borrow the boats and just take us out a little bit and I'll preach a little bit. And afterwards he says, you know what, let's go out, let's go do some fishing. And they go out and they say, well, you know, we've been fishing all night, haven't got anything. And then they catch boatloads of fish. I just wonder personally if there isn't a little bit of something here where Peter kind of got caught walking away from what God had called him to do. Are you following me? It's the frustration of saying no. He called me to fish for men, and I'm back fishing for fish. Now here we are in John 21, a couple years down the road, and it's after the resurrection. In fact, just a few days ago in the upper room where they were meeting, Jesus had said to them, he said, peace to you, and as the Father has sent me, I also send you. That's the fishing for men stuff. He kind of reiterated the fact that, you know what, I do have something for you to do. I'm going to send you out. You're going to be the nets. You're going to be catching men. He told them to get going. They got going. Back to their fishing boats. And again, they're catching nothing. They're catching nothing. It's frustrating when you're not doing what you know the Lord wants you to do. That's the frustration of saying no. You know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about? Now, sometimes it might be something as simple as, you know, getting up in the morning and spending time with God. And I know I'm supposed to do this. You know, and you do it for a little while, then you get sidetracked, and then you get hit with a real busy day. That's what happens to me. That's the kind of thing that happens to me. You know, I was up really, really late last night, and, the alarm goes off, and my wife is getting up, you know, and I'm knowing I'm supposed to get up, and I just go, just 5 more minutes, you know, and it's 10 more minutes, 15 more minutes, and next thing you know, I'm already late. And I don't have time to sit down and pray and read my Bible. And you know what? You know what is my experience? It's just my experience. It's probably not yours. Well, my experience is those are frustrating days. It just seems like I can't get anything done. Everything's interrupting me. I go from one thing to another, and I'm just in turmoil. I'm a mess. That's what happens to me. Sometimes it's just something as simple as that. I also find that on the days when I know I got a crazy, whacked out, horribly busy, terribly horrible, very bad day thing going, and I actually get up early enough to have my time with God, you know what? It is amazing. It is amazing the peace that takes you through that day. Sometimes maybe it's something as important as sharing the gospel with somebody that's been on your heart. You know, you've been praying for them, and you almost feel like God's saying, now's the time. Now's the time. But you kind of go, well, I don't know. I don't know if that's really what I'm supposed to do. You know, Jonah said no to God. Remember the story of Jonah? Now, Jonah didn't go fishing. Exactly. But he got to know a fish really well from the inside out, right? Gang, it's that frustration from saying no. Let me just challenge you to think about this. I don't know your life. I'm not here to push your buttons. Have you been saying no to him for something? I've been saying no to something he's been telling you to do. Wonder why you're frustrated. I think that's a little bit of something that's going on here in John. Is the guys that have been up all night. And darn it, there we go again. Fished all night. Caught nothing. Verse 4 in our text. But when the morning had now come, Jesus stood on the shore. yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Now, it says it happens in the morning. It's like a daybreak. Maybe they don't recognize him because it's too dark. Maybe he's just a little too far away. Maybe Jesus is doing that resurrection body disguise-o-matic thing. You know, I don't know exactly what it is. They don't see him. And it says he's standing on the shore. Now, the city that Jesus spent the most time in during his ministry was the city of Capernaum, and in that area around Capernaum. And just up the coast, or down the coast, whatever, to the left of Capernaum. Now, Steve, see, the Mount of Beatitudes is right there, right near Capernaum. And there's a little town, there's a place we call Tabqa, right there. And it's like one of the bestest fishing spots on the lake. This is Tabqa. Ignore the crunching sounds. There's gravel out there on the beach. Got to wear shoes when you're in Tabqa. This is going to be Amir Chirfati, who was our tour guide 4 years ago.
You know, it went up a little bit. In a good winter, you don't, and the water gets to the third step.
Really?
Mm-hmm. All right, if you come over here, there's an interesting thing to see here before we sit down on the rocks and we'll have our study. First of all, for those of you who haven't seen it yet, look how many fish swimming and jumping over there just right at the area where one of the springs flows into the sea. Can you see it? Another thing is one, by the way, whenever you have fish, you have birds that like fish also. But of course, this is one of the springs. There's another waterfall, which tells you of the stream of the water that comes into the sea, right on that side, beyond that eucalyptus tree. But before we sit down, I want to tell you that what made this place so special, besides, of course, the water, what made us know that something significant took place here is that ancient docking place for fishing boats that we found right here. This ancient staircase that is cut in the bedrock, we found also lots of hooks and needles and everything that has to do with fishing right here in this area. This is probably prime fishing docking place for fishing boats of the Jewish area in the time of Jesus.
Now, I'm not trying to say that what we're reading about happened at Tabqa, but it's a place like that, at the very least. There you've got the beach. There's a place for fish. In Tabqa, the fish hang out there because there's a hot springs and dumps out. The fish like the warmer water. So that's why, I don't know if you saw, the fish were like schooling and jumping and everything there. It's actually kind of awesome. I'm not sure I've seen that anywhere else. Not that they were doing that all that night for Peter and the guys. But that's the kind of a setting where Jesus is at. Verse 5, Jesus said to them, "Children, have you any food?" They answered him, "No." He calls them children. Now, he doesn't use the actual word for child. He uses the word for little child. Now, I don't know if that's really appropriate to be talking to these big, burly fishermen to say, "Children," you know, but it's actually, he's not making fun of them. He's not humiliating them. He's using a term of endearment. It's kind of like saying, "Hey, kiddo, did you find any, did you catch any?" And the way, when he says, "Have you any food?" the way it's couched in the Greek is that he's actually expecting a no answer. It's like he's saying, "You probably don't have anything to eat, do you?" You know, like, "I know you've been fishing all night and caught no fishes." Verse 6, and he said to them, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some." So they cast. And now they were not able to draw it in because of the multitude of fish. Now he tells them to cast the net on the right side. This tells us something very, very important about Peter and his buddies. They were all left-handed fishermen. Boy, I actually got a better laugh first service. That's just like, you know, right hand left. Okay, move on. If you didn't understand it, I'll explain at the end of the service. They did. No, I thought it was cool. Wah, wah, wah. Okay. I imagine for professional fishermen, having some stranger on the shore tell you, well, why don't you try the other side of the boat? I imagine they're going, yeah, right. And it says they tossed the nets and they were not able to drag them in. The phrase, they were not able, actually it's the word for to be strong, to have power. They weren't strong enough to pull these things in. With so many fish. When Jesus guides you, fishing isn't that frustrating. Look at how these guys are catching fish, and they're just using a light. Maybe you've seen this on the internet. I love the guy's face. He's like, it's just too much. Anyway, that's the way fishing ought to be, right? Verse 7. Therefore, that disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." Now, when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garments, for he had removed it, and plunged into the sea. The disciple that Jesus loved, this is who? This is John. Good job. You've seen this through the gospel. This is how John refers to himself. And John says, it is the Lord. For John, things clicked a little bit quicker than everybody else. Maybe because he was a little younger than everybody. I don't know what. He just got it a little bit quicker. Maybe he's thinking about the thing back in Luke chapter 5. The last time they were out fishing all night and caught no fishes. And the guy said, throw your net on the other side, and oh my gosh. It says, for Peter, when he heard it was the Lord, he put his outer garment on because he had removed it. It stripped down probably to his underwear or something, and he puts on his coat real quickly and he jumps into the water. New King James says he plunged into the water. The word that's used here is kind of interesting. It's the word balo. It means to throw or let go of a thing without caring where it falls. That's not the big deal. The big deal is this. That's the same word in verse 6 that's used to describe casting the nets. They were casting the nets. And now, Peter's not casting the nets. He's casting himself into the water. He's just jumping in head first. To me, this is a great picture of what it means to be fully committed. Peter's come to the place where he isn't going to stay away from Jesus any more than he has to. The last time Peter had been instructed to be fishing, instructed in fishing by Jesus, we saw him respond. He fell down at Jesus' knees saying, depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. That was the last time. This time, he knows he doesn't want Jesus to go away from him. He wants to get as close to Jesus as he can. And he's going to let nothing stop him. He's not going to be afraid of getting a little wet. And he's just going to dive head first to get to Jesus. He wasn't afraid to leave behind what could possibly be the biggest catch of his career. And he says, I could care less. And he puts on his coat and he jumps in. That's commitment. He leaves it behind and he jumps in. Peter is an example of what commitment is all about. Do you know the difference between involvement and commitment? The difference between involvement and commitment. If you look at a plate of ham and eggs, the chicken was involved. The pig was committed. You got it? Peter dove in head first. He's not going to let anything keep him from Jesus. Paul writes in Romans 12, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present yourselves, your bodies, a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Dive in, like Peter. It's a great picture, great illustration of commitment. He leaves the boat and he jumps in head first. Verse 8, back to our text. But the other disciples came in the little boat, for they were not far from the land, about 200 cubits, dragging the net with the fish. Now, they were about 200 cubits offshore. The cubit is the distance between the tip of your finger to your elbow. That's roughly what a cubit is. You might think of it as a foot and a half. That makes it about 300 feet or about 100 yards. Think of it as they were about a football field offshore. That's how far away they were. Verse 9, then as soon as they had come to land, they saw a fire of coals there, fish laid on it, and bread. Saw a fire of coals with fish laid on it. The word that's used for fish here can be translated fish. It could be translated probably better small fish, because the way this word is built, there's a smallish part to it. Like it's small fish. He doesn't use the regular word for fish, which is ichthus. And actually, ichthus will be in our passage. But he doesn't use the regular word for fish. In this verse, it says there was a fire of coals, and Jesus had put fish, little fish, on it. Fish and bread. I think it's interesting. Jesus had asked them, hey, you guys got any food on you? And really, what it was all about, he's the one that's serving them breakfast. And guess what he's serving for breakfast? Fish tacos. That's pretty cool. Don't you think that's pretty cool? Fish tacos for breakfast. Verse 10. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish you have just caught. He says, you know, get some of the fish that you got. Let's put them on. Let's add them to the fire as well. Verse 11. Simon Peter went up and dragged the net to land, full of large fish, 153. Although there were so many, the net was not broken. Now, the word that's used here that John uses for fish is ichthus. And in fact, he says they're not only just fish, they are big fish. They are, we might say in our language, mega fish. They're mega fish. And in fact, they're not just big fish, there are 153 big fish. Now, some people wonder about this. Some people really like numbers and the Bible and looking for mystical things and trying to figure out when the rapture is and all this kind of stuff. What's the number 153 mean? I don't know. I'm not smart enough to figure all that out. I was thinking that the seventh prime number is 17. You multiply that by 3, and then multiply by 3 and again, and you come up with 153. But I don't think I'm going to go there. What do I think the significance is? Look, the disciples are so blown away by the size of the catch that they take time to record it. They're true fishermen. They take time to take the picture of the biggest catch of their life. These aren't just fish. These are mega fish. That this is 153 mega fish. I'm wondering if they were going to register it with the Guinness Book of Records. This is probably the biggest catch ever in Galilee. Now, there's a principle here. Don't miss this. You may have to explain a little bit. My principle, I'm calling it big fish, small fish. Now, some of you are thinking Dr. Seuss and thinking one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish. That's not where I'm going with this. I'm going to talk about big fish, small fish. John carefully uses two different words for fish, and there's actually a rhyme and a reason for it. When he describes the fish from the disciples' perspective, it's ichthus. fact, it's mega ichthus.
It's big fish.
But when John describes the same fish from Jesus' perspective, see, they're dragging in the 153 big fish, and those were the same fish Jesus just said, bring some of those little fishies over here. Same fish described from Jesus' perspective is just small fish. What seems like large fish to us is just small fish to Jesus. We get all caught up with the things of this world and what seems to be a big deal to people around us. You know, we want to have the coolest phones. We want to have the fastest car. We want to have the biggest house. And Jesus says, those are just small fish. Those are just small fish. Last year, they did a survey among 220,000 college freshmen. The survey was about what is very important or essential to them. Of these 220,000 college freshmen, 78% wanted to be well off financially. That was a big priority. 78% want to be well off financially, compared to 1969, which is the hippie stuff, your generation, where only 42% wanted to be well off financially. 48%, it says, in today's generation, wanted to develop a meaningful philosophy in life. Whereas in 1969, it was 85%. We've changed as a society about what's big, what's important, what's our priorities. Jesus has maybe different priorities than we do. What we think is a big deal isn't necessarily a big deal to Jesus. They're looking for fish. Jesus is looking for them to be fishers of men. That's God's priority. Mark 1:17. Follow me and I will make you fishers. I'm not just going to make you the best fishers of fish the world has ever seen. I want to make you fishers of men. This is God's priority. It's why he sent his son to die for us. Because he's concerned about people, not toys. Big fish, small fish. What's important? Verse 12, Jesus said to them, come and eat breakfast. Yet none of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? Knowing that it was the Lord. It was kind of obvious who this was. I mean, when they were offshore, they weren't quite sure who that was. But when they got up close, it was very obvious. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and likewise the fish. This is now the third time Jesus showed himself to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. The third time being, the first time was that Sunday night with the group. He's counting the time that Jesus appeared to the whole group. The first was that Easter evening. Then the second was the time when Thomas was there a week later. And now in John's numbering, this is the third time. I just want to spend one more minute thinking about that phrase back in verse 3 where Peter says, I am going fishing. And I'd like to suggest that it's all about being sidetracked. In a way, you can't blame the fellows too much. They had gone through something that had turned their world upside down. They had spent the last 3 years following Jesus. They have seen amazing things. And even though Jesus told them ahead of time that he was going to die, when he actually died, they scattered. It was too much for them. It ought to probably be too much for us as well, wouldn't it? And even though they had seen the risen Lord twice already, I'd like to suggest that maybe they haven't quite figured it all out yet. And even though they have received the Holy Spirit, we saw this a couple weeks ago, they still haven't got to the point in Acts 2 where they will have the fullness of the Spirit, the filling, the baptism of the Spirit. They're still thinking in their own logic and their own leading. And And it seems like fishing's the thing to do. But several years ago, Jesus had changed their calling. He had changed their priorities. He had changed them from being fishers of fish to being fishers of men. I find it interesting that Jesus doesn't rebuke them for fishing for fish. In fact, he gives them a huge catch. But I got to tell you, as far as I can tell, this is the last time they go fishing for fish. Because I think they get it. I think they get it. Do you have a calling on your life from God? Is there something that God has been nudging you to do? Maybe for some of you, it's been for a long time He's been nudging you. And maybe you've gotten sidetracked. It's time to get back on track. Get back to the big fish that God has for you.